This is the Jewish News Podcast in association with Genesis Philanthropy Group, supporting Jewish communities worldwide. I'm Bridget Grant, editor of the JN's Life magazine, and coming up on today's show, we have a timely and very topical conversation about the Netflix hit series, My Unorthodox Life. I'm discussing the reality show, which focuses on Julia Hart, once an Orthodox housewife, now the CEO of Elite Models, with Yehudis Fletcher, Keshet Starr, Karen Skenazy, and Naomi Frankel. So I'm gathered by a charming group of people today, and for the very reason we all watch the same television programs. Well, probably not all the time, but I can say that we are all wholeheartedly invested in the show that has taken Netflix by storm. I don't know where it is in its ranking, My Unorthodox Life. It premiered on July 14th, 2021. And in that very short time that we've had, it has been an extraordinary hit, particularly within the Jewish community. We're very attentive to it because it centers on a woman called Julia Hart. She's the CEO of the modeling agency, or the conglomerate that is the modeling agency, Elite Models. And the most interesting thing about her for us is that she was formerly, in her past life, an Orthodox Jew. Very Orthodox and raised that way, and she broke away to launch into this new business. And the series, which is 9 parts, focuses on where she is now. We only see her transition photographically from when she was leading a religious life, but it's fair to say that the show, from the moment that you watch it, well, certainly the moment I watched it, gets you hooked. So I'd like to welcome and have them introduce themselves. First of all, in America, we have Keshet Starr. Keshet, tell us about you.
Hey everyone, I'm Keshet Starr. I'm the CEO of ORA, the Organization for the Resolution of Agunot. We deal with domestic abuse issues in the Jewish divorce process. I also became Orthodox as a teenager slash adult. I like to take my time and like to write and speak about Jewish issues in general.
Thank you. And also, I'd like to welcome, also in America, you're in America, aren't you? Yes. Karen Skenazy, tell us about you.
I'm in Birmingham.
You're in Birmingham with that accent?
Don't let my accent fool you. It's a Brummy accent. It's just a little known Brummy accent. I'm Karen Skenazy. I am a senior lecturer at the University of Bristol and the director of liberal arts. And I research cultural and literary representations of Orthodox women in particular, but Jewish literature in general. And I have written a book called Women of Valor, Orthodox Jewish Troll Fighters, Crime Writers, and Rock Stars in Contemporary Literature and Culture.
Wow. That sounds like a must read, absolutely. And welcome Yehudis Fletcher, who the community knows so well, but if you'd like to describe your role to people who know you less well.
Thank you so much. I think start by saying I have a little cameo role in Karen's book, which came out of the way we met at a Limwood conference, which was just encompasses a little bit about where we both come from in terms of curiosity and looking to grow and learn. I founded Nachama, which counters extremism in the Jewish community. I work as an independent sexual violence advisor at a charity called Migdal Emunah. And I'm also a student of social policy at Salford University and general agitator. Or Koch Level, I like to say Koch Level.
Thank you so much. And finally, well, not finally, because we're joined by the Jewish News fabulous editor, Richard Ferrer, on this discussion, the only man in the mix. But I'm also welcoming Naomi, who is one of our regular writers on the paper. She's actually been in the process of negotiating with the fabulous Julia Hart to be in our Rosh Hashanah magazine, which we, fingers crossed, with her daughters, which will be great. But Naomi, I, particularly because of your Orthodox background in Stamford Hill and being raised that way, you and I have already talked about this show, but please introduce yourself.
Hi, so I'm Naomi and I freelance for the Jewish News, as Bridget has mentioned. I'm also a part-time Instagram Israel Jewish activist. I go under Partisan Princess. That aside, yes, so I did grow up in the Sabbatical community. My family, I would describe, are yeshivish Haredi. And yeah, I grew up in that system. I would say I'm more traditional, light religious now. But yeah, I hope that I'll be able to contribute meaning and
especially to the fashion, especially to the fashion. There's lots of fashion in this show. As fashion
yeah, yeah. I'm looking forward to exploring that in my article for the Rosh Hashanah supplement.
Yeah.
We're going to be giving it a whole fresh new take.
I hope so. I hope so, Naomi. You're under pressure. But the thing is, the main thing here is I want to ask you all, and maybe just say it with an eye, but how many of you actually think the show is a good show? Good, well-made, entertaining show.
I think it is. Like, the visuals are stunning. It's really well put together. It seemed to me a bit more scripted than kind of off-the-cuff reality, but I mean, I think it's quite good.
Right. And Keshet, what's your take? Because you've already written quite a bit about it.
Definitely. I mean, I think in terms of watching it, it has the same sort of pacing and buzz as a typical Bravo show, which when I was studying for the bar after law school, I would watch the Real Housewives yelling at each other in the background while studying, and that just worked for me. So I feel like it has that energy. And I think as someone interested in Jewish women and Jewish issues, it's really fascinating to watch people argue about wearing pants on national television. Like, it's a very interesting thing to see these topics that are such flashpoints inside the community that most people don't think twice about. So, I mean, I certainly watched it with a lot of interest.
And Yehudit and Karen, have you been able to get into it?
Yeah, so I mean, thanks to Tisha B'Av, I shouldn't really admit this, but I did watch it on Tisha B'Av. It's a really long Tisha B'Av. And yeah, I think I kind of watched it from behind my hands, like with a certain trepidation, because it feels like, however distant, however geographically distant, it's almost like, oh, my sister's on TV. That's how I feel, like it's my community on TV. And there's that anxiety about, or what are they going to show? Are they going to show that embarrassing bit? Or are they going to gloss over that? Or are they going to make a lot of that bit that really touched me, and kind of as if it's somebody else telling my story? But obviously it's not my story, it's her story. So there's a lot of complicated feelings. But in terms of, like, do I think it's a good show? I have no idea. Like, that's not the type of TV I normally watch. So I don't really have other reality shows to compare it to.
Yeah, I think that because obviously Richard takes an interest, he took an immediate interest in this, because apart from, as Justin said, Ben and Jerry's being discussed this week and the non-sale of ice cream in the settlements, which is a bit of a rocky road, excuse me, but the thing is, though, I do think that when Richard takes an interest in a program, something has happened that's made him admit it.
Number one, thank you.
Why would Richard Ferrer watch that show?
Well, I do like reality telly. Thank you for the Rocky Road headline idea. I'm definitely going to get that in the
paper. That is amazing.
Yeah,
amazing.
That's terrific. Well, I mean, I've had a lot of different hats on in the community over the years. One of my hats was creating a TV show about 10 years ago now called Jewish Mum of the Year on Channel 4. So I'm something of an expert on the angst or even anger that emanates from the Jewish community whenever they are depicted on TV. So I instantly love to gravitate towards it. And obviously, to begin with, you think, oh, it's going to be klezmer music and cliche. But it was none of that. I just found this was a story of a really good mum, a loving, warm, bold mum, slightly overbearing, dragging her offspring with her every step of the way on that journey, but nonetheless an inspiring figure. And it's all too easy to criticise the format of it, you know, the Kardashian only way is Essex reality TV nature of it. But you can't criticise its heart, its stars, its substance. At the end of the day, this woman, it's in her mind, she has gone from A Handmaid's Tale to The Devil Wears Prada in about 7 years, which is just this extraordinary journey this woman's been on, and her cleavage, if I'm allowed to say that word. I mean, how does a woman from Monsey end up with cleavage like that? I mean, really, she's been on a huge journey. But really,
Richard, can I interrupt you? Really, it hurts me and pains me to reveal this to you, but Orthodox Jewish women also have breasts. No, exactly the same as other women.
I don't doubt it. But yes, the confidence that she has in the things she says, the way she portrays herself, she's clearly an extraordinary force of nature. And I find it quite extraordinary that she was prepared to live in what she thinks is this uniformity, this homogenous group for so long. It took her until she was 40 to actually step out. This is a woman who must have been ready to explode for decades throughout her adult life.
Karen, is this a woman, is Julia Hart a woman you think you could actually be friends with?
Oh, that is quite an interesting question. Well, am I getting rides on her helicopter? Do I get to hang out at her house in the Hamptons? I mean, let's set the parameters first. I think she's a really interesting character, and I say character because as much as it's reality TV, it feels very staged. But I think something that really I struggled with watching it is it's pitched as this very kind of, and she is pitched as a very kind of feminist character. You know, there's a really kind of funny moment where the young son, Aaron, makes a little joke about breaking the bonds of her prison for liberation. And I get that part of it. And I think that's an important part for her. But there's also a sense in which her feminism feels like it's not feminism, but maybe capitalism or maybe individualism even. But to go back to Richard's Handmaid's Tale, I mean, one of the things, if we watch The Handmaid's Tale, at the end of every season, June goes back to help people, right? That seems to be, it's not about June has to break free. If all the women are hurting in this community, how do we help all the women in this community? And I really feel like that's not what happens in this show. This is about, even there are moments where it feels like feminism means selfishness. Don't listen to anyone else. Don't respect anyone else. It doesn't matter what anyone else says. You are you. Is that what feminism is now?
I personally am a little bit more uncomfortable with it because of A, the fact that I feel it's very scripted, the fact that she lays claims to the almost the entire creation of elite models, which started in 1977 in France and was acquired, you know, over years with John Casablancas and everything. And the entitlement and the lack of modesty. I mean, it's interesting. I mentioned this to Naomi the other day. We are living in an age where actually modesty in dress has been very, very popular on the catwalks, on the runways, and showing less has been much more of a thing. And yet they fly completely in the opposite direction to this. And not only that, I think a good mother, I don't know how in you're all mothers, apart from Naomi, and which is obviously father. As a mother, I think the thing is about protecting our children as well. And I think that she has exposed them to a great deal and possibly a lot of great deal of dislike.
One thing I would say about her mothering, and I relate to this as a mother, but I still think it's inconsistent, is that I feel like her whole message is about not having choice and about taking choice where you can find it. And yet so much of the communication with her kids is there is a right way and a wrong way, and you are doing it the wrong way. She doesn't seem to really give her kids a lot of room to make choices. Now, again, I have four kids. I would like them to do whatever makes them happy, and it would be great if it matched with my own values. And I'm sure I would really struggle with it, you know, and I'm sure they will choose things down the road that don't match up with how I live, and that would be challenging. But it just, it bothered me to see that inconsistency, that for her, it was all about choice. And then for her kids, when they veered towards anything more traditional, more to the right of the spectrum in terms of observance, she was very blunt in how she felt about that and didn't seem to give them a lot of space to discover who they are, if who they are happened to be a more religious version of themselves.
Yeah, and that's particularly the case with her son. What I really want to know from you, because you are religious and I am not, and Richard isn't, I can say that. From a religious perspective, it does also feel that they look like stereotypical Jewish in the fact that the way that they're represented as having loads of money and able to have whatever they want. And we have gone through a period of time recently where we've struggled with anti-Semitism. It's at an all-time high in lots of countries, and notably in Britain at the moment, it's been difficult. What do you feel this program actually does in terms of propagating that message?
What bothers me the most about the program, and that's not to say that there aren't elements of it that I appreciate, but I think its portrayal of the religious community is not particularly nuanced, that there is this idea that religious, first of all, there's not a lot of separation between different types of religious communities, which is hard to do on TV, so I'll give them that. That's no easy task. But I think there is this sense of everyone in this community is oppressed, or everyone in this community has a bad education. And what bothers me about that messaging is that when we describe communities as these sort of amorphous lumps, we don't see them as people. And when you don't see an entire group of people as real people who are different from each other, that I think starts a whole other slippery slope of issues. It's kind of dehumanizing. I don't think that's the intent, but I think it's the effect. And you've seen a lot of conversation on social media where there's this message in the show that Orthodox women are oppressed, and then Orthodox women are saying, well, no, I'm not oppressed. And then there's a backlash to the backlash where people are saying, well, I'm Orthodox and I feel oppressed. And it can all be true. We can all have very different experiences in a system that is very varied within itself, but the show doesn't give a lot of space for that variation and that individual experiencing that can be just incredibly different from person to person.
Can I just jump in there really quickly? I totally hear what you're saying. For me, I think the focus really isn't her unique experience in the community. Maybe some parts are exaggerated for TV, who knows? I mean, it's reality, and reality is not always reality on TV. But I think it's important to note that, yes, there are very successful Orthodox women who have amazing careers and so on and so forth, but there still is that level of not exactly being the same in terms of, for example, women not being able to sing in public. It's something that Julia touches upon, or dance in public. Yes, you can do women-only productions, but that path is limited, for example. I know there was a whole scandal about Hatzalah, a women's division in America. I'm not sure if there was one set up, but I know that the Hatzalah male members were quite opposed to that. So I don't think we can say, you know, this full equality, everything she's saying is, you know, I mean, I know that you're not saying that, but the reactions have been, oh, well, it's not reflecting us, et cetera, et cetera. And we're not oppressed. Yes, you personally might not feel you're oppressed, but within the system, there still is a degree of oppression in that the way that women will never be exactly the same.
Can I respond and jump in on that? I think there's a huge difference between people being oppressed and there being systemic oppression, right? So the systems within the Haredi community, and when we say Haredi community in the UK, that's slightly different to how it would present in America. And again,
I mean, Orthodox is Orthodox, though. If you go with Orthodoxy, as a woman, it's called Kol Isha. You can't sing in front of men.
Right. So there are systemic oppressions within, if you want to call it Haredi or Orthodox Judaism. I don't like either of those terms particularly, you know, particularly within, let's say, where Julia's coming from. So she said Yeshiva Chaimish, which is like very, very niche and specific. And if you don't know exactly what she has in mind, then you don't really know what she's talking about. And then when you see her husband on screen with his blue shirt, but he's got a beard, but the beard's trimmed, and they live in a big house, and we know roughly where that big house is, and we know that the child is moving to a co-ed school, but where's he been before? If you know, you know, and if you don't know, it's going to take a really long time to explain, but from where they're coming from, there is absolutely systemic oppression of women in terms of what expectations there are of women, even if she does go out to work, in terms of educational opportunities.
Yeah.
you can nitpick and say, oh, I knew Julia and I know for sure that she was able to work and she was able to do this and she was. I don't think that's the point.
My thoughts are, and I totally agree, I think that we can't be honest with ourselves and say there aren't those systemic issues. I mean, some of us might be more exposed to them than others based on personal experience, mm-hmm. what you do, all of that. But I think in some ways, when there are these very sort of black and white, non-nuanced narratives, it creates a lot of defensiveness, which then makes community sometimes more resistant to addressing those issues. So for example, work in an organization that deals with the Aguna issue. So when someone can't get a Jewish divorce, we'll have protests, and we do work with secular media to publicize the issue.
Yeah.
And you get a lot of pushback about how can you tell people about the Aguna thing? It reinforces all these things that people think anyway. And my response is that the way to be sort of a model community is to talk about your issues, not to.
And you're addressing it. You're doing something about it. Like, that's amazing. I mean, I personally, I hate the whole GET thing, the whole system, how oppressive it is to women. But it's amazing that this is being addressed and you're doing important work.
And I agree. And I think that, I just think there's so much defensiveness, which can sometimes make it harder to deal with the issues. And it can also make us forget the fact that in the secular community, we do have some systemic issues to deal with as well.
Yeah.
That it's not like everything's rainbows and butterflies on the other side. Which
is
not
true. Yeah.
But just that, you know, gender oppression really shows up everywhere.
Really, I think that what it is whereas Stiesel was globally about an Orthodox family as a drama, was embraced around the world and people of all creed and colour loved it. This is receiving a lot more dislike from the community itself because they're worried it's going to create anti-Semitism. And I just really think, that was where I sort of started, is do you think it's going to do that?
I don't think so.
The only people who create anti-Semitism are anti-Semites, okay? We don't take responsibility for anybody else's bigotry. If we behave badly, and we all do, all communities have issues within them, some more than others, but if we can't talk about our issues publicly, these issues fester. We have to be able to, and we don't have time to wait for anti-Semitism to be eradicated before we can start saying, oh, now there's no anti-Semitism left, so okay, now it's safe to talk about the issues within our community. If we had no anti-Semitism and if we were all sunshine and butterflies, like Kesha referred to earlier, I think Mashiach would be here and it would be a very different month of art for us.
Can I jump in about the anti-Semitism question? I think actually she really does the opposite in many ways, because she is at pains to repeatedly stress that there is a difference between what she calls fundamentalism, and we can have a conversation about that, and Judaism, right? She keeps saying this is not about the religion. And I think that's a really important part of her message, because she does a couple of things that I really like, which is that she brings things from Jewish ritual life into her secular life. So what she does with Robert when she does a kind of tashlich for him, right? Where they throw out all his insecurities, right? She's taking something from Jewish tradition and bringing it, or she also brings a shadchan and he doesn't like it, but there's a way in which she's kind of taking these examples from Jewish life and valuing them, right? So she's not throwing Judaism out. She's saying, what I cannot stand is, again, what she calls the fundamentalism of the community.
Yeah, I agree.
What she's actually doing, though, is she's doing what Richard and I do, I guess, in that we cherry pick the best bits, you know, the festival parts that you pick from, that you love, and sense of family, and a lot of the rituals. I mean, Richard's probably saying, no, I don't do anything.
I don't think cherry picking is the right term. I mean, clearly, Julia and I, we're not strictly Orthodox, we're not Haredi, but we understand what a great product Judaism is. The education, the ethics, the respect for family values, the respect for the elderly, morals, culture, food. I mean, it's a great product. Judaism is a fabulous product. You don't have to be Orthodox to see that.
Yeah.
Jews have got, you know, the courage of their convictions to know that that's exactly who they are, and they're proud to carry that down the generations. Obviously, levels of observation are going to fluctuate greatly, but I don't think just because you're liberal progressive you're no less religious.
Well, yeah. On the moral front, there's an issue there, because there's a few things that happen morally in that show that I would debate whether or not she took that with her as well. But anyway, so just, Naomi's bursting at the seams.
So much to say. So just going back to the point you raised earlier about modesty, and now you're talking about the moral aspect. So I think that as someone who's come from a similar background, like religious background, with the rules of dress and all that, very minute rules, even in my school, like the length of our skirts and publicly chastised, I completely understand why she's bearing all now. I guess in a way it's kind of like a middle finger up to the rules, which I wouldn't say I do, but I definitely have more freedom in what I wear now. And I love that. And I think someone who's come from a secular background will never really fully understand that freedom and that feeling of I can wake up today and put on what I like without being criticized for it. So yeah, maybe she does take it a little far, in your opinion, with the cleavage and whatever. But I think for her, it's a very personal thing, like reclaiming her cleavage, you know, reclaiming her identity.
Reclaiming her cleavage. There's a line you don't hear. Right.
You know, I also show a bit of cleavage, yeah. You know, like maybe I'm reclaiming mine. But the point is that when you've gone from being told constantly that your skirt's too short, your top's too low, you're making men sin, blah, 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 there's a certain kind of don't care attitude when you realize that you don't really buy into that.
I get really bothered when people who have not had a from birth experience of that covering up comment on this aspect.
Yeah.
Absolutely nothing comes close to understanding what that is like to, you know, never feeling sand on the beach between your toes because you always had to wear tights at the beach. So people who've chosen Orthodox Judaism in later life and have had that kind of autonomy themselves will experience covering up in a very different way. Mm-hmm. To somebody who's never had that for themselves. Another thing that's really important to consider is when you're told that wearing your skirt even long rather than short, because a long skirt draws a man's eye.
Yeah, and it's more modern. Right? And it's more modern.
Right? Or you're told that, you know, a sleeve that doesn't cover your elbow is so titillating that man may like just spontaneously ejaculate, or chas v'sholom, think about it later on, and then what's going to happen when they get home because they saw your elbow on the high street, right? That kind of burden that we put, that is put by people in my community on girls and women, has a deeply, deeply damaging impact. If women decide to cast it off, there's often kind of a, well, there's nothing, like if my elbow was going to cause that reaction, then why shouldn't I go on Netflix with most of my cleavage out? Like, why shouldn't I do that? Because my elbow was going to do that. So what's the difference between my elbow and my cleavage? That's how I was brought up, that there was no difference between actual erva, which literally means your pelvic area, right, your vagina, and then everything else that you cover. Now, most people go down the high street, their vaginas display, they just won't do it. But if you're told that exposing your elbow and you may as well be doing that, then why shouldn't you?
Like, yeah, exactly. You hit the nail on the head. Do you know how many times?
On the elbow,
how many times I would get into this discussion, let's say about wearing shorts in the summer. I'd say, you know, like, I don't see anything wrong. I want to wear a pair of shorts. And then the answer would be, well, why didn't you just go naked? Why didn't you just wear a bikini? Why didn't you just not wear anything? And I'm like, really? But that is the snap response. So I completely get where you're coming from, Yehudis.
Yeah, but can I ask Keshet? Because Keshet, you actually have done this in reverse. You came to Orthodoxy. And so you had that experience before of wearing exactly what you liked. And now you've adopted it. So you're the reverse of Julia Hart. How is it for you?
It's interesting. And I do think the element of choice is different. And I want to put that out there. It is different to choose it than to just, you know, grow up in a community where that's expected of you. So it is a very different thing. For me, modesty was more of an empowering experience. And that sounds strange, but it was more of a sense of, I'm more than my body. I don't need to start panicking every March for swimsuit season. for me, that was sort of a positive thing, choosing, almost curating how you want to present yourself to the world and not having your body necessarily be front and center in that, even though I do care about looking put together and looking nice. And, you know, I enjoy fashion and all of those aspects. So I think it's just complicated. And I think that's what it comes down to, that to say there's no oppression is not accurate. To say that it's all oppression is also not accurate. That I think that dynamics of gender and power in these communities, the way that modesty can be sort of a shackle, but also an experience of freedom for people, like it really varies, and it varies among communities. I didn't grow up in a community, or I don't live in a community, and I don't raise my daughters in a community where I tell them that, you know, their body's going to be like poured into acid or whatever the, you know.
I've never heard that before. When that came up, I was like, that is something I've never heard.
But Naomi, did you hear the one about how the girls pinned their skirts to their calves?
No.
Sounds gory.
What on earth?
Yeah, you better
know. I haven't heard that one.
If you're being dragged to death by crusaders and you're being sort of tied to the back of a horse, then at the very least, pin your hem to your flesh.
Oh my God. Well, you know what I would do? I would
kick them where exposed.
My last moments would be kicking them where it hurts, not bothering about my skirts.
There we are. So Naomi, a woman that clearly will not be pinned down by her skirt. Can I just say that Richard raised it about what is primarily a huge difference for us as a small community of Jews in the UK versus a much bigger group of Jewish people in the US, of which Julia Hart is part and has been since she arrived there from Moscow when she was three. Do you want to elaborate slightly, Richard, before we close?
Yeah, just briefly, that's probably something that Karen and Keshet can elaborate on. My experience as a British Jew watching this programme, I imagine, is completely different to that compared to an American Jew watching this programme, because British Jews will cower, will feel vulnerable, will feel judged, will feel exposed, because that's the culture of Europe. That's the history of Europe in the last century. We were judged by our religion and we were persecuted for our religion. When I lived in the States, I was thrilled by how loud and proud American Jews were about their religion. It was part of the culture. It was the fabric of American life.
Not so much anymore with all the attacks.
Well, I mean, yeah, this was 15 years ago, but it's still to an extent very much part of Americana. In comedy and in peak show TV shows, it's completely different. So I was just wondering if you feel judged watching it, or you can enjoy it for what it is, which is just a piece of entertainment.
Seeing the Orthodox community portrayed when you're Orthodox, I think you expressed it so well, Johannes, that you're kind of like watching it like this, because it's like your own family on TV a little bit. Like if that's, you know, reading your sister's like memoir is not going to be a comfortable experience. I think it does have that dynamic and that energy. And it's been very interesting for me to also, because I have written about it, to have conversations with friends who aren't Jewish about what they're getting from the show and being able to discuss it between us. They get a lot from it and I get a lot from it. And so, I don't know, I don't feel afraid in that sense, but I do think that media has such an opportunity to build bridges and to give us insights into different lives. And it's such a good opportunity to bring in more nuance and more humanity. And I'm not saying there's 0% of it in the show, but I think there could be quite a bit more.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, look, I'd like to thank you all so much for taking part in this. I've seen it to the end this season, and I imagine there will be umpteen following parts, just like the Kardashians. I don't know whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. But in my mind, I don't want to judge. But I'd like to thank you all. And please say thank you to Karen as well, Yehudis, who had to leave us. Julia Hart's book will be out in September. I think her daughter has 11 million followers on Instagram. So maybe you've got somewhere to go.
Yeah. September, I will be meeting up with Julia for afternoon tea. She's reached out and wants to meet. So I have to get some recommendations from you, Bridget.
And wear your shortest skirt.
I'll wear what I like.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you all so much. And that's it for this edition of the Jewish News podcast in association with Genesis Philanthropy Group. Through its partners, GPG is working to support the growth of Jewish community life in the UK and worldwide. To find out more, visit www.gpg.org. All that's left for me to do is to thank our guests, Yehudis Flesher, Keshet Starr, Karen Skenazy, and Naomi Frankel, and our producer, Adam Bradley, and you for listening. Please do subscribe to the show in your podcast application. That way, you'll hear any previous episode or be informed when new episodes become available. Don't forget that for more information on any of the stories that we've featured, you can always go to jewishnews.co.uk. If you'd like to comment, then we'd love to hear from you at editorial@thejngroup.com. That's editorial@thejngroup.com. So that's thank you from me, Bridget Grant, Life magazine editor. Do join us next time here on the Jewish News podcast. Goodbye.